Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me as always, guess everybody.
It's Steve. Hey, John.
It's Steve. Yeah. No surprise here. Just a regular guest host.
How's it going?
Good. Apple, Qualcomm, the chip guys all have these massive profit outlooks. Massive, you know, huge. I think Google is up 32% in revenue because they weren't big enough already. Mm-hmm. Facebook did a face plant. It didn't look too good. People weren't happy about them getting blocked out by Apple. But Apple did amazing. Number one in China again for iPhones. And the reason I bring this up is because some of these guys really have a good chance of eating or are eating smaller fintechs. What do you say? Meal? Lunch? They're eating their lunch. That's sure. What they're doing. Yeah. And Apple announced that they're going to make their iPhones into payment terminals.
So this is basically the idea of taking making an iPhone into a Square terminal, sort of a point of sale,
an NFC on-the-go chip. Point of sale. Oh, you're so 2012.
I'm so old with this. Yeah. No. What's the deal? Tell me. What's the deal with the iPhone becoming a POS now?
Yeah. Well, different kind of POS than what you say, Steve. I know you're an Android sure. guy.
Yeah.
So they're gonna introduce. Actually, they have so much hardware, so powerful that they just have to add software, and it can just do some whatever new thing it is, right? So they're gonna leverage their already existing NFC capability, so you can just tap. You know, the new cards have the little chip in them, so you can tap. I don't know if you have this on your card. I have one card that has it.
I think all my Amex cards do have that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The My American Express one does. Yeah. I mean, you know, if they would approve the transaction, it would work from my case. But so then they'll make it so you can just tap that card on there, and then you don't need the little Square or Clover or, you know, whatever people are using now. It'll just be built in, just another thing.
How is that different from, say, Apple Pay or Google Pay, which I actually use a lot?
Well, you can take card payments, which I don't think you can do now, right?
Oh, you mean you can also...
Just for tapping. So if you're a small business, you can just tap someone's card and you're good to go.
Oh, awesome. Interesting. There you go. I think this is another point or another... brick on the wall that's being built is basically, you know, fintech is going to take over the world for sure. And every company will not be a fintech as well.
And yeah, I did catch the Pink Floyd reference there a little bit.
Sure.
We don't have the kids singing in the background.
If you don't eat your pudding, you can't have your meat, or the other way around.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the other way around.
I think it's the other way around.
You'd have a lot of uneaten meat if that was the case.
That's right.
You know, so yeah, we need help sorting out our word, using our words sometimes, but we have someone that doesn't need help using their words, fortunately. And, it's kind of a expert, I would say, on, payments and lending, and especially the tricky international payments, which can be kind of a pain, expensive. And in the olden times, you had to go through your bank and there's paperwork and getting approvals and all that. Ahead of time and very slow. I'm making her case for her, basically. But we're lucky to have Marianne Morrow, the CEO and founder of Ninth Gear Technologies, with us this week. How are you doing, Marianne?
John and Steve, it's a pleasure to be with you today, and I just love the diatribe between you guys.
Thanks. Ninth Gear Technologies is kind of a getting their hand in the finance and the payments, and it looks like the lending as well. Give us the rundown on Ninth Gear Technologies, and why should I invest my $100 million with your company?
Sure. Well, first off, let me tell you what we're not. It's kind of like when I'm a big wine collector, I can tell you what I don't like easier than I can tell you what I like. I really don't like Chardonnay, but there's many types of wines that I do like. And so first thing is, we are not a payments company. We power the FX trade. So what we do is Ninth Gear powers near real-time settlement in financial markets. And we're starting with foreign exchange or FX because it's large and liquid. And I love that you were talking about Pink Floyd because I love music from the 70s. And I go back to the 70s every time I think about the rails on which money moves. The current FX markets are plagued by just antiquated technology and systems from the 1970s, 1973 to be exact. And we solve this problem by doing a couple of things. One, we flip the model from trade then fund to fund then trade. It sounds really simple. It's not as complicated as you would think, but we do have some sophisticated technology that we've employed, cryptographic technology. While we do not put anything in and out of cryptocurrency, because that adds risk, we want to mitigate risk, we do use distributed ledger technology. And we have a very elegant solution that provides transparency, reduces risk, and dramatically lowers cost to participants. And so we ensure that there are funds for payment. And that's really important. And that is ensuring funds for payment is critical, because when you don't have the funds, you can't make the payment. So that it's a really critical piece of this infrastructure. And settlement risk is a big deal. It's one of the most important things that happens in foreign exchange is the concern of settlement risk.
So continuing with Pink Floyd, I think Steve Jobs got the idea for FaceTime from Wish You Were Here. Just a little known
really fun fact. Who knew?
Yeah, made up facts. But so you don't do, so back to settlement. So you work with a financial institution as their back end. Nobody goes to you directly. Is that right?
Yeah. Think of, we're completely behind the scenes institutional play. And, you know, as you were talking about, if you don't get your pudding, if you can't eat your meat, right? And think of us as the meat inside powering the trade, right? So if you don't eat your meat, you can't get your pudding. So it's very important that these trades go through and go through perfectly. And what happens today in the system that is reduced, you know, it's like an accordion, it's been compressed dramatically. When I first started, it was T+7, then it went down to T+5. It's now mostly T+2, which means it takes 48 hours. You trade on one day, and then you have settlement 48 hours later on a good day, right? These are business days. So if you're trading with Japan, you got to send your yen, and you're going to keep your fingers crossed that you're going to get your dollars back 48 hours later. But sometimes things happen and things break, and you could have weekends involved. Right now, you know, it's 1:30 on the West Coast. You know, you can't really move money right now because it's past closing time. So if you do a trade, it's not going to get kicked out until at least Monday. And then, you know, you got to wait till Wednesday to have all that stuff settle. And that's a really long time. If you've got a holiday, fortunately in FX, there's only two trading days, Christmas and New Year's when things are closed, but you could have a holiday in a different jurisdiction, Asia week or China, you know, the golden week over in Asia. Things just take a while to get done. So if you are moving in global commerce, you know, there's $6.6 trillion per day that goes through this, which, let me tell you again, for people, you know, in the cheap seats way in the back, $6.6 trillion per day. That's a lot of money going through this. So it's an important thing to get right. And when it doesn't, you have breaks, reconciliation errors, corrections, and things go wrong.
So I understand that you, with Ninth Gear, you basically want to bring on the new face in FX trading and in settlement. But I want to understand, before we get into that, sort of what the state of the industry is now. What are the major players? And you mentioned that the transaction times have gone down from T+7 to now T+2. Mm-hmm. What drove that? And again, sort of, where is the largest volume of this stuff going through? Is it through SWIFT or corresponding banking or another sort of method?
SWIFT is very much in play, right? It's technology from 1973, and it does have, that's one of the payment rails. And this industry is has a hold from very large banks. So you think about the largest banks, and I'm going to just say that a lot of these banks are more technology companies now than they are banks. They spend oodles on technology. Just the largest banks on the planet are the ones that are providing the most of the volume in the FX market. 88% of all trades happen with US dollars. And I say 88% because you've got to count both sides. So don't think that I don't understand math. It's the Bank for International Settlement adds all this stuff up and they're the source for this data. And 88% still goes through US dollars. So it's a huge currency. And it still takes a lot of time based on those rails. And a lot of it is, could it get to T0? I believe it can. A lot of people are pushing, DTCC and SIFMA are pushing for it to go to T plus one. And I'm like, why stop at T plus one? We can get all the way down to T0 in a different way. So some of it is inertia, because if it's always been done the same way, why do you want to stop when you're making money doing it on the float? There is a better way to do it. And also it can be, there's money that can be saved by doing it in a different way. Just think of that time. If you're putting the money out there for 48 hours, somebody's using that money. And also there's a credit component for each of these transactions, which it fundamentally doesn't really, you know, on the face of it, doesn't really make sense, but there's always a credit component to an FX transaction. So we have deconstructed these transactions into trading and credit, and we toss the credit component of it over to an asset manager for the intraday lending or intraday liquidity piece, so that we're adding liquidity to the system. Liquidity has been contracting globally for many years. And in 2019, there was a situation with the repo market that just had a massive spike. You Google Wall Street Journal repos, there's a great 15-minute video on it. You can understand all the stuff that happened, but it's because liquidity contracts, and it will continue to contract as we move through 2022. I still see it contracting.
If there's a TikTok video, maybe I can handle that.
You can get it, John.
I'm trying to sound younger than I am. You mentioned you used DLT technology. It seems like there's a lot of people working, because of the fast settlement, eliminating the manual hands, getting on dirty, mussing up a pristine transaction. What do you think of things like Ripple, or I think it's JP Morgan's Onyx? It sounds like you're already implementing something, but there's like these larger forces and solutions at work. Even CBDC, I guess.
Yeah, so let's unpack that.
Similar line. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. So first off, we have chosen to implement this in a fundamentally different way. When I started to look and became enamored with blockchain in 2017, I had seen blockchain in 2009, but it was very scary back in 2009. It was almost about overthrowing monetary authority. And
Silk Road and...
Yeah, there's in Mt. Gox, there's all kinds of some bad behavior. And even today with the wormhole bridge that, you know, we looked at $320 million just fundamentally just like disappeared for overnight. Jump trading actually took that and put the money back and made sure that nothing broke, but they put that money back into the system. So you still see some bad actors in the crypto space. I think about cryptographic methods and the underlying technology, and that's what excites me. And I had what I call a blockchain awakening in 2017, where I was sitting on the back deck of Plug and Play, which is an accelerator, a big accelerator here in Silicon Valley. And I was watching a batch of fintechs go through, and one out of every three companies was talking about blockchain. I just was like, why are they all talking about blockchain? I really need to understand this. And so I sat down on the back deck and was talking with a few folks, but and one of the people there explained it to me in a very different way. And the light bulb went off because I thought about the breaks, reconciliation errors, and corrections when I was overseeing an operational group and finance, and couldn't understand why there were so manual processes. We had systems, all kinds of digital systems, but every day people will come in super early and take information out of these mainframe type computers and put them into Excel spreadsheets, do a translation and pop them through. I'm like, why are we doing that? Just adds human errors into the system. And so I really thought about the way that cryptographic methods, not necessarily cryptocurrencies, could the cryptographic methods underneath it could eliminate these breaks, reconciliation errors, and corrections. And I just thought to myself, whoever can harness this is going to make a shit ton of money. And I said, I want to be right on the tip of that spear. And so how can we take this and utilize it? And settlement is really an area that just amazingly really can utilize that technology and solve some fundamental problems. We are not a solution looking for a problem. This problem exists and we are solving it by using this. It's not the only technology we use, but it is the most appropriate form of technology at this point in our history to be able to use this to eliminate some of these manual processes, so that we can have a single source and an immutable source of truth that allows for this transaction to be validated. So I do not believe that we need to put something in and out of crypto. The cryptocurrency just has an incredible amount of risk just by looking at how it fluctuates in value. So if I'm trying to take risk out of the system, why would I introduce more risk by taking it, putting it into a cryptocurrency, doing the translation, and then taking it back out of a cryptocurrency? I'd have to have three bets correct, because I'm already betting on the price from one traditional currency, dollars, euros, yen, et cetera. I have to make that bet correct. And then I also have to make the bet into cryptocurrency and out of cryptocurrency correct. That just adds orders of magnitude more risk into the system. So we've decided to, and we've done this in a way that's an elegant solution to ensure that we can move it through our system without moving it into a cryptocurrency. So we're doing it very differently than some of the other players in the space. I think that what Ripple is doing with, and I've met Brad Gerlinghaus at a Fortune brainstorm event out in Montauk a couple of years ago. And
oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and what they're doing is really fantastic. I've interviewed their chief strategist, and we seem to go to all the same conferences, so we know each other. But I think that what the way that we're doing this is just fundamentally different, the way that we're attacking this. You also mentioned CBDCs, or central bank digital currencies and coins, and I spend a lot of time thinking about that. And Daniel Gorfein and Chris Giancarlo, who were at the CFTC, are now behind the Digital Dollar Project. We need to, in the US, get it. We don't have to be first. We need to get it right. So those types of projects are still what I call projects at the moment. And I think that those are probably 5 to 7 years out. And we will have interoperability both vertically and horizontally with those projects. The Monetary Authority has Project Ubin, Canada has Project Jasper, the Bank of England has their project, and it will be interesting to see how some of them develop, but they're all their own projects, and I don't see them all coming together to form some kind of consortium to be able to trade them. I think that you will still see sovereign jurisdictions have their own currency. So we're moving a couple of steps into going from analog to digital, but the markets are not modernized by any stretch of the imagination. They're digital incarnations of pen and paper, but they're not modern in a way that we can just digitally move things through. And I was listening, John, to you and Steve talk about your credit cards. Yeah, we're moving into a system where we're not touching the coins really anymore. So you're not having to touch the paper, and there's, the coin shortage, which is kind of a funny, topic. But we're still not completely transferring everything in a digital way in the back offices of finance. The retail plays are much further along than the back office of how money moves. I used to always say that the easiest way to move money is to get on a plane with your suitcase full of it, but those things don't really work so well because flying places is becoming more and more difficult.
Actually, yeah, there's a lot of confiscations of cash when people take it that way. As a side note, I've seen where people carrying thousands of dollars to buy a car or something is very suspicious. They get the money taken away for months or years at a time.
Yeah,
it is. I've heard the anecdote that it would be faster to fly from Heathrow to JFK with a bag of cash than to actually transfer it. It's 6 hours versus 2 days.
It's still the case. Yes.
So you have no concern from a company strategy that eventually once the Voltron of all these CBDCs come together, that will sort of obviate the need for a business like yours and your product, or do you see it more as being complementary to what you're doing?
I feel very complementary. I do not see that they're a threat, and we are ready for when they're ready. We're building a system that works today. So I think about the way that we're doing our deployment and how we're addressing the market, our go-to-market. It's very much as Reed Hastings was doing with Red Envelope. Do you remember the Red Envelopes that you would use to get your Netflix DVDs? I can't imagine putting, waiting for my mailbox to receive that little red envelope and, thinking I want to just binge watch whatever the show is right now. I can't imagine having to wait that time before me. I could go to the next series or the next episode. But he couldn't have all of us binge watch when he first started because the internet wasn't ready. And we're still having problems with bandwidth because everybody's online. We're building a system that works today that will move into the future. So I want to make sure as we're deploying our methods. And when I first started, I went and talked to 100 financial institutions before I started this gig. And I asked them two questions. What are you doing with crypto? And what are you doing with blockchain? People laughed. They just laughed out loud. And this was back in 2017. The only ones that didn't laugh were Fidelity. And Abigail Johnson is just so far ahead of everybody. She put servers in her office because she wanted to understand how mining works. And they're doing a lot of stuff with crypto. You can use it in the cafeteria to buy pizza. But nobody else was talking about this in 2017. And when I started to go out and have meetings with large financial institutions, they always had somebody in the room that had their hands crossed, just listening, the risk or compliance. They're like, yeah, we're not doing that. Now we're seeing some institutional adoption of cryptographic methods, but there's still a lot of stuff happening in the innovation group, but not in the capital markets groups. And the person that used to run the SEC, Gensler's there at Gary Gensler's at the helm of the SEC now, but Jay Clayton was there before him. And I was at a conference in December with Jay Clayton, Brian Brooks, Christian Carlo. There are 100 or so folks in the room. And we talked a lot about the networks. And after that, later in December, Jay Clayton wrote this article in the Wall Street Journal. I think it was December 16th, if you look it up, about how cryptographic technologies is one of the most important things that will happen in finance. So the folks that are running some of these agencies or were running agencies are very bullish. So we refer to Christian Carlo as Crypto Dad now. He wrote a book called Crypto Dad. And it's a fascinating tale about what he saw at the CFTC. And it's not as nebulous as it once was. Gary Gensler certainly understands how cryptographic technology, distributed ledger technology works. He taught a class on it at MIT. It's really...
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does next. And I think that there will be some changes in regulation going forward. Right now, it's the Wild West, but I'm very interested in the networks that people are building and how people are going to be monetizing this. And we've certainly figured out a way to use it and how to monetize it.
So how did you actually get the company going? It sounds like you had a lot of contacts. You were able to talk to people, do a lot of research as you were getting started or before you got started. How did that process work? And then what pushed you over to decide to invest your capital and all your time on it?
Yeah. So when I understood the technology in 2017, I spent a lot of time just looking at all different protocols, how the technology worked. And then I also studied securities law and figured out what to do and what not to do. More importantly, what not to do. And I realized that settlement was a perfect use for this technology and it can fundamentally change and make the entire process more efficient. So that's when I said, hey, we got to start and look at this. Any digitized asset, we can move through the system and make it settle fast. We decided to pick foreign exchange for two reasons. One, because it's large and liquid with the 6.6 trillion per day going through the market. But secondly, was because from a regulatory standpoint in the spot market, spot transactions are ones that you need to do immediately. Immediately is still 48 hours, but those are transactions. They're not forwards, but they're ones that you need to have that need to happen right away. We do not need to be a regulated entity. It is something that is not in the jurisdiction of the SEC, the Fed, the Treasury, or the CFTC. There are some best practices that we need to follow that are called the Global Code, just series of rules that everyone follows. But because it's institution to institution, we don't need to be regulated per se. We'll have to make sure that we follow OFAC and some of those other laws. And we certainly keep all of that stuff. And we're very mindful of regulation. But I'd rather pay developers than to pay securities attorneys. We have good relationships with our securities attorneys. And we have
Robinhood could have used you a little earlier.
Yeah, I want to talk about Robinhood in a second, but we have two folks on our advisory board. One, it used to be an SEC attorney, and he's a compliance guru. And so he keeps us on the straight and narrow. We also have somebody from a compliance standpoint. So we're thrilled to have folks on our team that really understand this. And we have many people that are from the industry that understand the regulatory perspective and how what to do and what not to do. But all of these different rules and regulations are important. So when you see a daisy chain of bad behavior, like you know what happened with Robinhood earlier this year, where I don't fundamentally think that they understood what value at risk was, you get into some issues, and you know they had a call from the NSCC in the middle of the night saying, "Hey, you owe us $3 billion. You need to put up." And I truly saw the story unfold and change as the week went on, because Elon was on Clubhouse and invited Vlad Tenev to come up on stage. And he said, yeah, he's like, I got this call in the middle of the night, 3:30 in the morning, and they wanted all this money and they negotiated it down. But you see that, you know, people are paying for order flow. And while it's kind of free for folks, it's not really necessarily free. People are paying for order flow. And we started to have some of that come out in the hearings. I'm not sure that Maxine Waters and all of her constituents really understood or asked the right questions there, but
how dare you? How dare you? Our Congress people, they know everything.
Congressional bloviating never happened.
They have the best tech questions ever. My grandson changed my password.
Yeah, they also asked, remember when they asked Zuckerberg, like, well, how do you make money? And like,
Senator, we sell ads. Yes, yeah, we sell ads. That's how we do it.
You are the product.
Speaking of the company and your board and your composition, I was going through it. It seems like I was actually shocked. I mentioned to John before we recorded that a lot of employees are women, which is not all that common to see in fintech in Silicon Valley. How do you achieve such an amazing ratio of male to female employees, especially in fintech and in finance?
Steve, we look for happy, smart people that get shit done. And I cannot underestimate the happiness factor. Nobody wants to work with people like our Rose.
I guess Steve and I are out for sure then.
you guys are fun. We just hire the best person for the job. And sometimes that's a female. I'm used to being the only female in the room. I have no problem with that. And we give people a seat at the table when they do good work. And we've had an amazing amount of good work done. And the women on the team work hard and they don't complain. And that just is a joy to work with them every day.
So what was the, let's see, how long have you been around now?
We incorporated in January 17th, 2018. So we've had four-year anniversary.
4 years. So what was the biggest obstacle you've encountered so far?
Funding is a female. It is the biggest surprise I've had. And I said that I'm used to being the only female in the room. I studied some tough subjects in school and always worked on Wall Street in Boston and New York quarter. But I never have encountered the gender bias like I have in Silicon Valley. And I have sat across from VCs that a male VC who has never asked me a question or never looked me in the eye and just talked to my male counterpart. It's shocking.
Really?
I just stopped talking. And this was recently, it was in 2019.
Wow.
I just stopped talking because I didn't want to have money come from him anyway. I wouldn't take it. Only 1.7% of funding goes to a sole female founder. So it is less than 2%. It's not getting better. And women always receive the prevention questions, not the, hey, what are your hopes and dreams? Where will you be in 5 years? It's always, well, what's your competition? Don't they already have this? Why isn't somebody else doing this already?
Do you know watching your kids? Who's cooking dinner for your husband? What year is this? Why is this not 1953?
Yeah.
Wow. No, I've heard that in other countries recently. I have friends in Japan, and there's a founder where she brings her employee with her to do the talk, because when she does it, they just ask the guy she came with questions and they never addressed her. But I'm surprised. And, you know, I haven't gone for VC funding in a while, but I'm surprised that that would be the case at all here, especially with so much attention to that issue.
And the other thing is that we are working in an area that is arcane. So when I try to explain this to someone and they're not from the industry, they just look at me puzzled about, why is there a credit component and why does it take so long? I can just Venmo somebody money. You know, you might be able to Venmo, but
on the front,
you know, Wells Fargo going to JP Morgan, it takes 48 hours and you could walk into Wells Fargo and say, hey, I'm going to go shopping in Paris, you know, tomorrow. And I want to take, you know, $10,000 and move it into euros. And if you're a good customer, they'll just, you know, hand you that. Sometimes if you're looking for a strange currency, they might say, come back in a couple of days and we'll get it for you. I use USAA. I just put in a request and they overnight it to me, but it's still, that's because they're doing me a service behind the scenes. The institution to institution takes a really long time. And so there's the interbank market, which is one thing. It's just all the big boys playing with each other, but we're focusing a lot on the corporates, you know, large, you know, mid-sized corporates, and they have a hard time, you know, getting it all the way through quickly. And the banks make a huge float for that. So, you know, that's one thing is that, you know, the explaining this to someone that's not in this market, sometimes they just don't understand. And then the other thing is that I'm a female. So those two things together make it hard. Nissa Amels wrote a book called WTF is Happening. It's all about women tech founders. First Round Capital did a study and they were the ones that came up with the quote of 1.7%. It's not going down. Women do ROI, a return of 63% better. So I know that we're doing this correctly. We've not received any institutional money thus far. We've raised over $5 million. It's been hand-to-hand combat with a series of angel investors, and we'll raise our Series A when we're in market. We're just about going into market. We're doing some pilots right now. We won this really big contest last year. I'm going to brag for a second. We had a opportunity to be part of what they called a hackathon, but it was four banks that got together. It's called the Global Open Finance Challenge. And they put together this hackathon where you played in their sandboxes. It wasn't just, here's a problem, solve it. They said, here are our sandboxes. Try them out and let us know what you can do. And there were very strict rules. We could only have 6 of our members or our employees participate. And we had 1 week. And so we applied, we got in. There were 200 plus institutions, 91 companies did the entire challenge. And then we moved to the semifinals, and then we presented again. And then we got to the finals, presented again. And then I had the pleasure of presenting to the CEOs of NatWest, CIBC, Itaú, and NAB. So NatWest is in Europe out of London, National Westminster Bank. It used to be called Royal Bank of Scotland. Then CIBC, Canadian Imperial Banking Corp, out of Canada. Itaú is out of Brazil, and NAB is out of National Australian Bank. And so I presented to the 4 CEOs plus the CTO of Amazon and 2 VCs, and we won. We won in the experience category. And as part of the prize package, we're now moving into what they call proofs of concepts. We've already done a proof of concept. We know that what we're doing is on the money. We've done end-to-end tests on it. We've seen the change of beneficial ownership on reflected on our blockchain. So now we're putting this into, you know, more official type of proofs of concepts, or what I'm going to call a pilot. So with all of these institutions, and then I'm going to, after that, we'll just keep things on. We're at the process of getting ready to monetize this. And at that point, once we finish that, we're going to make a lot of noise and then raise our Series A, because it won't matter, you know, whether male, female, it could be, you know, purple with green spots. We'll at that point be able to raise money, and the money will flow.
Well, you're going to get millions of people listening to this podcast. So
yes, indeed.
Yeah. So if someone wanted to get a hold of you, where could they reach you?
Marianne, MaryAnne at ninthgear.com.
GEAR.com. For sure. Well, good luck to you. It sounds like you're doing some great work and helping to fill some of Steve's dream, which is instantaneous payments at every level. He goes dream. On about this.
Someday
all the time.
Will happen. Yes.
Yeah. Someday will happen. Marianne's on it. Thanks for joining us.
It was a true pleasure and treat to talk to you today. Thanks, John. Thanks, Steve.
That's Marianne Morrow, the CEO and founder of Ninth Gear Technologies. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.